The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey there, Thunder Buddies and Travelers Down Thunder Road. It's us, Days of Thunder, the WCW Thunder Rewatch podcast that you didn't ask for, but we did anyway, coming to you as part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, back for another Nights of Nitro special. I am your host, your Nitro Girl Spice on Thunder Road, Dave Ryan, and I am joined, as always, by my faithful co-host. He's Stagger Lee Malone. Lee, how are you?
I don't like the implication that I'm the mean gene of this partnership.
Yeah. we're trying to hawk
actually,
new
wait,
model
hang on.
Beatles.
Maybe I am the mean gene of this partnership. Actually, do you think I could get away with setting up a hotline?
Oh, yeah, well, I'm sure, you know, like, the 90s nostalgia has started to, like, creep in over the last couple of years, so I'm sure 900 numbers are right around the corner from coming back.
I could just rob all of Fivefold's great scoops that they put up for their $5 tier and put them on my hotline.
Did you ever fall for any of the, like, those kind of, wheel, you know, you ring up here, like, the Corey's
hotline? I was just going to say the Corey hotline.
Yeah, or anything like that, anything similar where, like, you text a thing in and we'll take a lump of your credit and give you something shit for your phone.
Apart from ringtones, no. Yeah. But no, yeah. I never really, like, I'm just a little bit too young for the whole hotline thing. Mm. Also, it wasn't really a thing over here.
It definitely wasn't as much. Yeah, I can't think. Like, I'm sure there was, you know, call local girls in your area,
oh, yeah,
sort of things.
Yeah.
But again, the two of us would have been too young to even fucking notice that stuff in the mid-90s. Yeah, I think ringtones were the one that, like, oh my god, you mean I can get my phone to ring and it sounds like a really horrific version of The Simpsons opening?
Yeah, a 2-bit Simpsons theme or Mick Foley's entrance music.
And then, like, maybe a year or two later when I discovered looking up things on the internet, and it's like, hey, here's, like, the exact code you punch into your phone to make a polyphonic ringtone. I do remember when, like, the slightly newer Nokias then came out and you were able to make your own ringtone.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it was revelatory, you know? It was like it was almost as big a leap as when I found out, you know, when I got my first phone with apps. It was a quantum leap technologically. It's like, now I can make terrible Simpsons theme ringtones just by typing in a series of about 100 random digits on my phone.
There was also that period of time where everybody had real songs as their ringtones, and you would hear some absolutely awful songs. Hmm.
I often in my work, like, it makes me feel young and it makes me feel old at the same time, you know, working with, like, young teenagers and things like that, and one of the things that they just can't get around their heads is, because we were the first generation that really, like, got mobile phones or cell phones, as our American friends would call them, so we do remember having most of our childhood without them.
Yes.
Like, I got my first one when I was, like, 12 or 13, and I remember that was, like, quite young to have them in the, like, the late 90s. It was a hand-me-down, obviously. Like, you weren't buying a 13-year-old a new phone back then, perish the thought. But this giant Sony Ericsson monstrosity that I had that only had, like, a single line of visible text on it. But Yeah, something that the young people I work with can't wrap their heads around is the idea that, like, for most of our childhood, if, like, I tried to call Lee to see if Lee was around, and Lee wasn't within reach of the phone attached to the wall in his house, I wasn't talking to Lee that day.
Yeah, it's like that. I had that kind of period. Like, again, I'm a couple of years older than you, and it was that thing of where you knew your friend's house number because... Yeah. You would occasionally be allowed to ring them and see if they're actually at home before you walked the whole 5 minutes down the road to see if they were there.
You remember a time where, like, having a landline in the house with a wireless receiver was like living in the 31st century?
Oh yeah, you were totally middle class if you had a wireless phone in your house.
Yeah, or the cordless, as they call them here. Yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah.
You would always have that neighbor you'd hear talking to somebody on the phone. Yeah, I'm out the back on the phone. It's great. Yeah.
I feel like I'm slowly turning into my granddad as time goes on. Like, my granddad, who's a great man for, you know, if any of the grandkids were hanging around the house and they were complaining about, oh, there's only, like, chocolate digestives here. There isn't any other, like, bars of chocolate or anything like that. He'd be like, when I was your age, I used to have butter and sugar sandwiches. Those were the only sweets. I was around before they invented chocolate bars. Like, I don't think that's strictly true, but you're going to say it anyway.
I mean, I never realised your granddad was that old, but you know.
Yeah, well, he certainly likes to act that way.
It's that whole thing of, I used to walk 15 miles in the snow every day to school. Yeah. You know, it didn't snow for 15 years in Ireland. It fucking snowed that day.
He's from a town where there is, so, like brief, boring Irish history lesson. There used to be an area around Dublin called the Pale, which is kind of where the anglicised settlers were kind of all located, and us horrific Irish natives, primitive beasts that we were all outside the Pale. There was a period of time where there was actually a wall around the Pale. And my granddad is from the town where there's a bit of it still standing near the Carlow Gate.
Okay.
And the way he talks about this Pale wall is as if he was there when it was still standing. And, like, the Pale was conservatively 650 odd years ago that line was drawn around that area.
That reminds me of Jen's granddad, who, when we started going out, he would call me the Dub.
The Dub.
Now, bear in mind, Jen's family live conservatively half an hour outside of Dublin.
Yeah.
You know.
That's enough that matters.
Yeah.
It matters. I'm surprised you weren't got around Ireland as well. Like, people who, like, aren't originally from the area who come to the area, they get known as the blow-in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's the one, yeah. Sure, only passing through, like. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sure. That's what I mean. Like, where I live now, again, a little bit further out again. But it's like, oh, yeah, more Dubs. Fucking blow-ins, yeah. Look at it. Taking over the town.
Yeah.
Never mind that everyone is from Dublin in the town.
Yeah. I live in Kildare, which is the county right beside Dublin, and most people here are from Dublin. Do you know what I mean? Emma's from Dublin. Like, there's just, you're everywhere.
Yeah, it'd be like people in New Jersey complaining about people from New York moving into New Jersey.
Yeah. Yeah.
For comparison.
Except it's an even shorter distance.
Yeah.
Like, it literally, I could walk to Dublin from here in, you know, like, half a day.
God knows you wouldn't get any public transport.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah, I'd probably beat the bus up there. Fuck's sake. Pal, before we get into the nitro of it all, and the significance thereof, do you want to let everybody know what's been happening on the Patreon? Patreon.com/WCW Thunderpod the last week, and what we have coming up on the schedule?
Yeah, so last Thursday we dropped Rehash 2. Rehash of the Champions, our Clash of the Champions retro podcast, which I host, where we go through every WCW, NWA era Clash of the Champions all the way up to 1997. So yeah, we dropped number 2. Some great feedback already.
Miami Mayhem,
yes.
It feels like it's already turned into more of a, less of a Clash of the Champions retrospective.
More of an Al Perez career retrospective.
Yeah. 100%, yeah. I don't know how we've worked ourselves into that particular shoot, but here we are.
If you want more Al Perez, you can take a stick at, well, Rehash is for you. Then this coming weekend, we are going to record our second Patreon show of the month. It will be a DOT at the movies. And of course, it is the Jesse Ventura story. There was only ever one choice that was going to win that poll once we discovered this movie was actually real.
I'm like, you know, anybody that heard me on the show, like literally discovering this movie live on the air, will know that I have this tentative mix of excitement and a deep, deep fear as to how bad this is going to be.
This could go so many ways. I don't know what to expect from this.
I know one way it won't go well.
So we will record that this weekend, and that will obviously drop next Thursday from when you're listening to this. Coming up on the Patreon, we will have, again, Dave will record a grab bag, which will drop later on this month.
About this, like, just before the movie's show drops, because I like to get it out before the end of the month.
Dave has also updated the sheet this month, I believe.
A lot of Rampage catch-up this month.
Yeah.
Because if people are sleeping on AEW Rampage, guys, it's like... It's a pretty great
show.
It's
a pretty great wrestling show, to be honest. Yeah. Also, keep sending your recommendations, because Dave has got some great recommendations. I know he's added a lot of them to the list.
Yeah, we got two more since the sheet post went up that are on my to-watch list for this month. And I'm also looking for people to cut through the chuffa and tell me what are the matches I absolutely need to watch from the G1, because am I fuck watching, you know, an hour and a half of six-man tags followed by a couple of gentlemen three-star matches?
Yeah, I'd love to have the time to watch the whole G1, but it's not going to happen this year. So yeah, that's this month on Patreon, and then next month again we'll have another rehash, and we will drop a new series that we're planning for August.
Yeah, and that is, I don't know if we've mentioned it on the free feed before, but that is a show called Black and Golden Days, which, you know, keen-eared listeners might be able to figure out that it is an NXT retrospective. And yes, we are going to start with the reality show era of NXT. So, yeah.
We're both looking forward to that one.
Yeah, I know you're a big fan of the corn-fed meathead. Skip Sheffield.
Listen, anytime I get to talk about Michael Tarver, I'm all about it.
That knockout punch he never fucking used.
Because, of course, the Big Show had a knockout punch that he used at the time, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's Patreon. Obviously, we appreciate any subscriptions. If you can throw any money our way, there's three tiers. There is the $1, which gets you access to the sheet, I believe, doesn't it?
Yes.
And show notes, I think. See, if we were actually professional, we would know all this stuff. We have the $5 Team Beefy Da, which will get you access to pretty much all of the content. And then we have the $15 TRL tier, which will give you the option to select a TRL for the Patreon exclusive shows. So, as you know, we drop a TRL every now and again on the main timeline. So we have two more that will drop.
Season one.
Yeah, one will drop directly the show after Spring Stampede. And then we will have another one shortly after that. And then coming up on the Patreon, we have two already on the schedule. And so yeah, if TRLs are your thing, we are going to be dropping plenty of them in the coming months.
They're going to be coming thick and fast. Because we had two people take us up on the offer straight away, and we don't want to leave them waiting too long. You will get a couple of nice extra bits with your TRL if you vote for them in season two. We're going to like record a special intro just for the person who requested it, and that'll be in the copy of the podcast that we send to them. Everybody who subscribed to the Team Beefy Dad tier is going to get the TRLs anyway. That's just a little special thank you for the people that subscribed. It is a limited tier as well. There are only four slots left for season two, so if you have a really good idea for something you want us to be subjected to, get in at the $15 tier, or bump your, if you're at the $5 tier already, bump it up to 15. You only have to do it for 1 month. Once you bump it up just for 1 month to the TRL tier, that's your TRL secured. We'll be in the DMs to ask your request, and then the month after you can immediately drop back down to whatever tier you're more comfortable with.
We will say it doesn't have to be a wrestling show. It can be anything. It can be a movie. It can be a book review. Whatever you want us to do, TRL is your way of getting us to do it.
As we have gone on record, there is very little we will not do for money.
And then I know we mentioned August, and just from having the chats before we went live here, I think September is going to ramp up to be a really good month on the Patreon.
Big month. Mm-hmm. We have we've a return of a show that the second episode in a series that was very much enjoyed in its debut, and that's Drafts and Draft. We're hoping to have our second episode out in September. Mm-hmm. The topic and guest, because there will be a guest on this one, to be revealed. We are also planning tentatively a little bit of a live stream for Patreons only.
Mm-hmm.
May have something to do with a pay-per-view that's coming in September. Who knows? We'll say a little bit more closer to the time.
You only got a bit more high pitch there.
Those are in addition to the other things we have planned, there'll obviously be a second Patreon show. We'll be cranking out one of the TRLs that month as well, at least.
As we have said before, if we get a dumb idea, chances are we will do it on the Patreon.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So that's patreon.com/WCW Thunderpod. Anyway, that is enough hawking ourselves out of the way. Let's talk to the other sponsors. That's right, Days of Thunder listeners. It's that time again. If you have an appetite like the corn-fed meathead Skip Sheffield, you're going to want to listen into this, because we got to talk about our friends at HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get farm-fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. Choose from 55-plus weekly options featuring pre-portioned, high-quality ingredients picked at peak ripeness. HelloFresh delivers fresh, quality produce from the farm to your door in less than a week, so you can savor summer flavors right from home. Select meals from the Taste of Summer series that are sure to become everyone's new favorites, like the Old Bay Shrimp and Sausage Boil and family-style grilled steak lettuce wraps. Holy hell. To avail of the offer that's being made to you, the Days of Thunder listener, all you gotta do is go to HelloFresh.com/VOW16 and use the code VOW16 for up to 16 free meals across 7 boxes and 3 free gifts. One more time, that's HelloFresh.com/VOW16 and use the code VOW16 at checkout to avail of that offer. And if that doesn't sate your appetite, I just don't know what will. It's HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. Back to the show. Okay, ad corner over, my friend. It's time to talk about Nitro. And before we get into the number Nitro and the date of the Nitro, Lee, in a nutshell, why did we pick this Nitro? Because this was something we were asked on the Discord, the VOW Discord this week, which, by the way, join in the VOW Discord so you can chat to us on there.
So we picked this episode for basically one segment and one segment only. It was the Bret Hart Goldberg segment on the show. A infamous WCW segment. Mm-hmm. And that was basically the only reason we picked it.
And I'm only really learning having watched this show. Like, I definitely haven't seen that full segment start to finish before.
Mm.
I've seen the clip.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen the clip. Like, it's one of those clips that, to WCW's credit, for better or worse, they hit you over the head with that clip over the couple of years that they remain in existence. Mm-hmm. Because even, you know, like I've said, we're coming up on the time where I start watching WCW religiously. And I saw this clip a bunch of times as a kid, but definitely didn't see this Nitro. Something that really energizes me about it as well is that it's the very rare sight of WCW in Canada.
Yeah, it's the first time in the Nitro era they've actually gone to Canada. Now, listen, they had a lot of actually good Canadian wrestlers, so it's somewhere they probably should have went before this. And I want to say the crowd was good when they were given stuff to invest in. But this, I mean, on a broader level, I thought this show was pretty fucking bad.
Yeah, wasn't great. There was some stuff to pick out, for sure. But yeah, it was a thing where the Canadian crowds, you know, it's not full, you know, bizarro land. What it is kind of what you hit on, is like they're hot for stuff that earns it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to give you great reactions on a plate either.
No. If you're going to feed them shit, they're not going to treat it like it's something serious.
Yeah. So there are moments here on this show where it's like, damn, this is like a hot crowd. And there are things they could have done on this show that I think would have made this a really momentous nitro. But they just don't go with it. But look, let's get into it as we go. This is Nitro episode 185, dated the 29th of March 1999 from Toronto, Ontario, gaining a rating of 3.6 boys. So that's down slightly from last week. I think was it the last Nights of Nitro. Literally 1 week ago was a 3.9, I believe. Mm. We have a cold open with gormless sack of shit David Flair and Samantha in front of a fireplace.
I have to ask, is she still Samantha?
She is. She has gone unnamed for several weeks now.
Yes. Do you think they actually forgot they named her Samantha?
I would say there is almost a 100% chance that is the case, yes. Okay. Every time I go to type her name down, I first type it as Tori yeah, because it's fucking Tori.
Yeah.
But like they haven't identified her as that yet, and I'm not letting them away with the fact they haven't done that yet. So they have a cold open in front of the fireplace. I believe, Lee, the way this is shot, because she's in like a kind of like a cocktail dress, and I believe the way they're intentionally shooting this over the back is to make the salacious implication that she is in fact nude on this chair at first. Because it's literally, they pick over the shoulder behind the two of them talking to each other. They picked the one camera angle from which you couldn't see any of the dress. Like it's just kind of like bare shoulders and arms and stuff like that. So I believe that was their attempt to hook in the lads at the start of Nitro here. But unfortunately, within seconds, any sort of reverie that an adolescent man might have been having is shattered by the pitchy whining of David Flair, saying that he can't believe his dad is ducking Hollywood. Hollywood treats me like a real dad should. Even like the most pathetic line in here was like, he even let me in his jet. I can't abide in this company is how often people, and in this case David Flair, flub their lines on a pre-tape.
Oh, they do it so often. Like, so often.
He's just falling all over himself here, mm-hmm. and he doesn't have that much to say.
Now, listen, do I believe this is the best take they got out of him? Yes.
Yeah. It's not necessarily that they did one take. It's probably this is the best they got.
Now, listen, if there's one thing we know about Hollywood Hulk Hogan, it's that he is absolutely a great father.
Yeah. 100%.
I mean, listen, did David Flair ever really have a chance with these two men as the fathers in his life?
No. But I gotta say, David Flair's performance here, again, it's one of those, you know, the point has been hit on many times in other places, not just us, but the fact that you have one of the most charismatic people in the history of professional wrestling in Ric Flair, and his son is this void of personality absolutely remarkable.
But we know this happens so often in professional wrestling. Yeah.
It's a certified phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
The only one I can think of where it's like charismatic father and charismatic son is Soul Man Rocky Johnson and The Rock. It's like two, you know, and I wouldn't say Rocky Johnson was like a talk him into the building kind of guy, but he had a physical charisma about him, and The Rock just had every measure of charisma.
Actually, speaking of The Rock, have you seen any episodes of Young Rock?
No, I haven't.
Unfortunately,
you're giving people ideas to sign up to the TRL tier and make us.
Unfortunately, I have seen a lot of them because Connor is obsessed with the show.
Oh no!
And
can't win everyone, man.
I have pointed out that the show is so inaccurate in everything it does.
Yeah.
Now, listen, I can understand why it's entertaining to a 9-year-old because it has like an Andre the Giant as like a main character.
Yeah.
And it kind of skips between general, like The Rock is a kid and then he's a teenager and then he's in Memphis. And
Look, man, if we were the big dog's age and there was like a proper network TV show about wrestling on there, we would eat that shit up regardless of quality.
So, but yeah, it's really bad.
But compared to David Flair in this segment, I thought Tori was like Meryl Streep. Like, she doesn't... I think she has three backstage segments on this show, and like, it's not like she's, you know, she's actually like Meryl Streep, but she's like, she's pretty competent for someone that's had very little TV time.
Oh yeah, she's absolutely like the best part of any of the promos she's involved in. But I mean, you mentioned Meryl Streep, and then the fact that WCW shot her as if she was looking naked. So can we now just call her Meryl Streep?
God, you've been waiting all week for that one, haven't you?
Yeah, listen, I think of these things on the spot. I don't plan anything.
Yeah. You're just, what's that? You're doing a big check mark on your notepad there. They keep calling Rick a loser in this segment. So they're still heels, but Ric Flair is also a heel,
and Hollywood's a face.
Yeah, this is something that would become, over the course of these 3 hours, nearly impossible to track.
Mm-hmm.
The way they're doing this, and it's not. Again, this is before, you know, the let's do Shades of Grey Russo era. This is legitimately, I believe, this company are forgetting several times a show who are the baby faces and the heels.
Can I just point out, you spent like 4 minutes talking about just the cold open.
Yeah, and it was like 45 seconds long.
If even.
It's Nitro, and it's the Nintendo 64 Beetle Adventure Racing Battle for the Beetle competition.
Sweepstakes.
There's so much 90s about this. I remember the return of the Beetle. I remember advertising for Beetle Adventure Racing. The Nintendo 64 logo makes me just pine for the days.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of a sweepstakes on TV to win a car. This is just some great shit. Some great A nostalgia here. Oh yeah, also Nitro is in Canada for the first time.
I would say you are a big fan of Herbie the Movie, were you?
A little bit.
Yeah, you're that target age, I think.
I wasn't the remake. I was too old. I was a teenager for the Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, were you? I would have thought that was your.
Oh no, no, I was like probably 17.
Oh, right
then. Yeah,
this was a lot later than I thought then.
Yeah, yeah, no, that was like mid 2000s.
Ah, I thought it was early, maybe 2001.
It didn't it feel like Nitro being in Canada was secondary to the Beetle being hocked off here?
Yeah, like, you want to talk about like shameless advertising on a show, it was just constantly hit over the head with, hey, you want to win a Beetle?
It's like a shameless bit of advertising for not only the model of car, but for the game on N64, which itself was a shameless advertising. Like, it was a game specifically put together to advertise the fact that they were making the Beetle again. Yes. As of 1998. I had said, I was talking on Twitter about this last night as I was watching it, and I remember the box art of this game clear as day. But I never played it, and I always assumed it was kind of crap. And then I looked it up, and right, not only was this getting rave reviews out the door, because I scoffed at the fact Tony called it the best racing game of 1999, because I was like, a bit premature, because I remember Gran Turismo 2 comes out in 1999. Yeah. There is not a chance that statement holds up by the end of the year. But apparently, this got rave reviews, and not only that, I was floored to learn, because I thought there was going to be some like backwater studio publish this game. This was published by Electronic Arts, EA. Hey. Yeah. Hey. So that was absolutely blew my mind.
You know what? That would make sense, because EA also made the WCW games. So the fact that it was being advertised on Nitro would add up.
So Nitro is in Canada for the first time. They have I love that they have the actual N64 boxes, another prime bit of nostalgia in front of the lads. I miss physical boxes for games. That's besides the point. Huge Larry chance. He gives them what they want. already, Lee, the We Want Brett chants.
Yes, loud.
Oh my God. And do you know what? Larry, as we cut to the ring, you can hear Larry mumbling, "There's no game in my box." And we see a clip from, they don't throw it to the ring, they throw it to last week on Nitro, a clip mm-hmm. of Brett laying down the challenge to Goldberg. And a penny dropped, Lee. This is the first time Brett has wrestled in Canada since Montreal.
Oh, God, yeah, I had never even thought of
Imagine if his first time, if I have my head screwed on as a promoter and a booker.
You're putting him in the world title match, aren't you?
I'm doing Flair versus Brett for the title. And I'm, even if it's just for a month, I'm putting that belt on Brett. Mm-hmm. Just to be like, we gave you what those fuckers wouldn't.
Yep.
You know what I mean? You've then made Canada as a territory for WCW.
What they did wasn't necessarily bad. We'll get to that.
Yeah. So, yeah, imagine if he had laid down the challenge to Flair. Like, definitely, I would, again, it's one of those things where you definitely should do it on a pay-per-view if you're going to do the world mm-hmm. title, blah, blah, blah. But seeing as they were obsessed with ratings, even if they did a one-week build, it's going to be Brett versus Flair for the belt in Canada, home field territory, first time back since Montreal.
Well, Dave, I'm going to blow your mind here. I'd say they probably knew a couple of months in advance they were going to Canada. So they could have, now hear me out on this.
Yeah,
they could have planned to build to a match.
Yeah. Nah. No, they were too obsessed with doing a stupid double turn in a cage.
Yeah.
Our first match on the show is Conan versus Vincent. Conan is out in his new, now that he's been out of the Wolfpack, he's got his new Conan 187 shirt. Widely beloved by the crowd, as has been the case for quite some time. Slags off the NWO, then he's about to turn his attention to cut a promo on Disco, but he's interrupted by Vincent. Vincent just keeps incoherently shouting threats at him as he's walking to the ring, and I appreciate he gets so tongue-tied between he's trying to say that you were black and red, but I'm going to make you black and blue, and what comes out of his face was, I'm going to paint you black and red, long pause, you know what I mean.
Yeah. People think Vincent has been a gimmick for the last 15 years. Oh no, yeah. No. That's just the way the man is.
Yeah. First match in, commentary already bickering with each other. Cool.
They are fucking, they're awful tonight, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I actually think when Brain arrives for...
They get better.
They get better, yeah. And Brain is on it tonight, I mm-hmm. thought. But we'll get to that when he arrives. Very early on, Larry Zbysko calls Vincent the bottom dog of the NWO. Fucking harrowing. Conan putting a whooping on Vince till a low bridge gives him the heat. Crowd having none of Vincent with the heat. They're just there. They don't believe for a single second that Conan's in peril. Vince goes to do that kind of sweeping elbow drop kind of thing. But he's so uncoordinated and unathletic that he goes to do it and then just kind of very slowly falls to his knees and gently caresses him with his elbow.
Yep.
And then gives him a punch. Absolutely awful. Conan gets his feet up in the corner, hits his rolling lariat, but Stevie Ray is coming down the aisle. Stevie Ray comes down the aisle. This distracts Conan. So try to follow this. This distracts Conan. Vince clotheslines Conan in the back of the head. He himself then becomes distracted for long enough for Conan to recover, hit the face buster, the tequila sunrise, and win. I tweeted about this. I gotta love a match where it's an NWO guy versus a former NWO guy. And an NWO guy comes out and distracts one guy and then the other guy. It just fucking...
See, you're
there's a lot of sucky finishes on this show, and this really started off strong.
You're trying to apply logic to an illogical situation.
Hmm.
See, we have established over weeks and months at this stage that anyone still wearing an NWO black and white shirt is a fucking moron.
Yeah.
And Stevie Ray, who seemed to be above it, is now getting dragged right into it.
Yeah, it's full Keystone Cops. It's awful stuff.
Horrendous. Just an awful way to start what should have been a hot show.
And it ends with Larry Zbysko playing the role of everybody's grandfather by asking if Conan can now pull up his pants. Then we get Hogan and Tori cackling about having David on a short leash. So clearly they did three backstage segments with Tori, and she probably moved a total of about 3 feet during all of them, because it's clearly like the same room, just mm-hmm. a different angle.
Well, I mean, she's the most important person, so they're all going to see her. Yeah.
This is like, she's the best booked, like, the well, not the best booked, but she's like the most consistently booked character in the company right now, probably.
I'll give it time. That will soon change.
So they're cackling about having David on a short leash. The main thing that I took from this segment is anytime Hogan is trying to be cool when younger ladies are around, it's very funny to me. And not in a way that he intends.
I think it's incredibly awkward.
Oh, it is incredibly awkward, but it's like he thinks he is playing a blinder here. And it's just like, it's like your embarrassing da. Someone call a cab to take him home. And yeah, they clearly filmed it like a minute after the date. Like David walked out of frame, Hulk walked in, they hit record again. They might have even stopped the camera.
And the main takeaway seems to be that they are rebuilding to Nash versus Hogan again.
Yep, because who doesn't want to see that again? Gene welcomes Hogan to the ring. Hogan has popped the top off before he even says a word. And again, we have just seen him in a devious heel backstage segment, but this segment in front of the crowd, pure babyface.
Well, one, I believe they wouldn't have shown it on the whatever screen they had in the arena.
Yeah.
And two, it's fucking Canada. Hogan is always over in Canada.
Yeah. Oh, and he fully, like, it's not like he was trying to dissuade them from that, because it starts off with a, well, you know something, mean Gene, which got a
huge pop.
Oh, and they were eating out of his hand. It was one of those meandering Hogan promos where he takes ages to say fuck all. Mm-hmm. Basically, he wants Flair in the ring tonight, and it's his belt and he wants it back. But it's one of those where, like, I hated it. It was bad, but crowd loved it.
Yeah, the crowd loved it. It was, like you said, rambling Hogan at his worst. But, I mean, what blew me away was Hogan using the bra. He's like, you know something, bra?
Yeah.
It's like, when did Hogan move to fucking Hawaii? Like,
I know. We get a repeat of 60 Seconds with Goldberg. Let me tell you, whoever put that video package together, I hope they were eating well, because this company got their use out of that video package. Which, look, we're noted fans of.
Mm-hmm.
Tony says, this is okay, so there's a theme tonight, and that's them acting like they're planting seeds for someone eventually showing up, and then they literally just show up within an hour.
Yeah.
So Tony says Sting has been sighted in Toronto. Possibly kind of like non-specifically, agents have maybe even seen him in the building.
No, what he said was Border Patrol agents.
Ah, okay.
They had seen Sting.
It's like, so Tony's crossing the border and the Border Patrol agent is like, hey, we have to protect people's personal data, but I thought you should know Sting's here.
A guy in black and white face paint.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was just true here in the car in front of you.
He was, yeah. He had a bat and he was sad. Do you know him?
There was some young lad in the back seat with him with a skateboard. I mean,
yeah, it's
weird.
Yeah, yeah. We didn't look into it. They're kind of openly speculating, will he? Last time they saw him, he was in the black and red of the Wolfpack. Will he still be aligned with the NWO, or will he be out on his own again? We shall see. A lot sooner than I would have hoped. This is something they absolutely should have built for several weeks. It's like, he's been sighted in the area. He's been sighted in the building. There he is.
Again, you would think Sting leaving the NWO would be something they would build to.
He's just not in it anymore.
No, I don't like you anymore.
Yeah. We then get a DDP Steiner recap, and then a Tanae sit down with Paige. Oh boy.
Hey, you remember when DDP was like the number two babyface in the company?
Man, I'm so deflated by this, like, just half-arsed, we're just turning Paige heel now.
Because he's got an attitude.
And that's all it is. Like, he doesn't do anything bad. He's just, like, a little bit fucking snippy in this interview, basically. He said, Tanae's asking how Kim is. He says Kim's fine. That the Steiner recliner gave him, was it sporadic paralysis in his legs?
Herniated disc, I believe.
Yeah. He isn't looking to make excuses. It simply isn't going to happen again. Tanae asked about, there was, if you remember back to last month, there was talk of a stipulation that Kim would be in Steiner's service for 30 days if Paige lost. So he asks, what about the stipulation with Kim? Paige asks if he's an idiot because he never would have agreed to something like that.
So we're just blowing our stipulations because they're stupid.
Yeah. It's basically, they did it, and they were like, okay, we've no idea how to pay off this stipulation. Let's act like it never happened. Tanae was kind of asking what's next for the People's Champ, and he's like, enough with this People's Champ stuff. And I agree, enough with this People's Champ stuff. When he comes back, he's going to pick his spot. Little did we know, his spot would be in just a handful of segments.
4.5 minutes, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, it's like 2 segments from now. Fuck's sake. So yeah, he's going to get to Steiner his own way. Which is amazing. It's like, it's a full heel promo, but he's still threatening a heel at the end of it. So like,
Shades of gray, brother.
Yeah. We have got up next a Titanic singles match that I know you were excited by, Lee. And it's Wrath versus Chaos in the Battle of the Angry Man Names.
The Angry Man Names.
Yeah. I'm sure the likes of, you know, Robbie Roy and, I don't know, Freddie Fuming or whatever must have been. They must have, like, missed their flight or something if they couldn't get involved.
Tough Timmy wasn't available tonight.
Yeah, Tough Tom, Salty Sally. Yeah. This was not a great one, pal.
I mean, listen, anytime you get Kenny Chaos in the ring, you're guaranteed a match taking place.
Go forth from this place and say the days of thunder. Mark our words. Anytime Kenny Chaos gets in the ring, time will pass. That is the days of thunder guarantee.
They weren't even on the same page with regards to spot. Like, it was just a really, really bad match. And
they weren't the same fucking genre.
And this is a point I want to make. Nitro is now 3 hours, okay? So we're now fully in the era of WCW are just blowing off the first hour.
Yeah.
You don't
they don't give a fuck.
You don't even get an introduction. They only introduce Nitro at the 9 o'clock hour.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about that on last week's one, where it's like, it's literally at the top of the hour. It's like, okay, let's do the opening credits for the show.
Like it's so bad that like they are getting this money from Turner, and they are just putting absolute shite out in the first hour.
It is like an active attempt to fucking tank that first hour to not have to do it anymore, is what it's like.
Which is so unusual because, like, they active. Like, I know the whole thing with Thunder was, oh, Bischoff didn't want another show or more hours or whatever, but, like,
he did want the third hour.
He did want the third hour.
He wanted the unopposed hour.
Yeah.
This match was shockingly long. Like, shockingly long for these two guys.
Mm-hmm.
They both got absolutely fucking gassed, like, relatively quickly, and it went on for a while.
And this was the match where Larry Zbysko really started to irritate me.
Yeah, I just started tuning out the commentary from this point. One thing I will say, before we keep on with our grievances, there was a couple of, like, moments of, hey, that was a nice little half second of something that looks semi-athletic. So there was like a decent looking stalling vertical from Kenny Chaos that was like, okay, that was pretty good looking. There was Wrath did a missile dropkick that he got like a pretty decent leap on. I was like, okay. And then that was it. That was literally like two spots I have picked out of a match that went probably about 10 minutes.
It felt like never ended. Honestly, like, if you look this match up on Cage Match and it was any less than 9 minutes, I would be stunned.
Kenny Chaos at one point did a guillotine leg drop off the top rope, and you, listener, I cannot impress upon you how long it took for him to get onto the top rope. It was I thought they were going to have to send for help. I thought he got lost on the way up there.
I mean, he was tired. Give the man some credit.
Empires rose and fell in the time it took him to get from turnbuckle 1 to 2. Fuck me.
I mean, listen, it was an integral part of the match. I mean, you couldn't have had this match without that Guillotine leg drop.
Yeah, that just to lead to another near fall. Chaos then runs into a death penalty, meltdown. I loved about this meltdown, like even in the era before HD cameras and microphones, you could hear Rat counting to 3 for the meltdown to get Chaos to jump. You could hear 1, 2, 3.
hot take here, but the death penalty should have been his finish because that looked awesome.
Yeah, it did. Tanay then does a plug for the 900 number as we go to the break.
Do you think we could get Tanay to plug our Patreon?
Oh, that would be amazing. I'd love to have the professor involved. What a man. Genuinely, like, what a guy Mike Tanay is. I love him. I really do.
Maybe we'll have to get on to Garrett. See, does Garrett have any connections
I think we've talked about this before. Do you remember how much people, like the kind of like the nascent days of online wrestling communities and like the power slams of the world used to get on Tanay and Don West?
Oh yeah.
And
yeah,
like act like they were terrible. Same with Michael Cole and Taz. As like, look back on that shit now, guys. Like those dudes, like Michael Cole and Taz, like I'm not saying they were world class, but they were definitely a lot better than people gave him credit for. Tanay and Don West were genuinely fantastic for a long time.
Well, the thing on Cole and Taz was people snubbed that, or, you know, took shots at them because they had to be produced by Paul Heyman.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. What's the problem?
Yeah.
And then the Tanay and Don West thing was, Don West was never supposed to be a commentator. It's just everybody else in TNA was fucking horrendous. So they said, hey, Don, you're good at selling stuff. You like wrestling.
Yeah, and the sell is what they were able to do. Like, for years in TNA, they were just what got you in, apart from, like, the amazing shit you were seeing in ring sometimes, was it was commentated by two guys that genuinely seemed super fucking hyped by what they were watching.
And hey, if you want to hear people talk about and love the early days of Don West, you've got to be kidding me on the VOW Podcast Network.
TNAchad.com.
TNA, yeah. Garrett and Liam go through all the early days of TNA.
Yeah. An excellent podcast to which I am subscribed on the Patreon as well.
Two friends of ours, obviously friends of the show.
Yeah, who will, of course, be back at some point in the near future. Christmas is coming. People who were around last year know what that means. Fucking hell.
What's the new one? The Punishment or something, is it?
Oh, fucking I can't remember.
WWA.
I have it. So, yeah, for people who weren't around, who are kind of relatively new listeners, last year we began a new Christmas tradition where we get Garrett and Liam on to review a WWA pay-per-view, which was the...
The Reckoning was the first one.
Something like that. It's like, it's... How would you describe it? A promotion that wasn't quite... WCW still wasn't quite TNA yet.
What was the worst parts of both?
Was the worst parts of both, had a lot of the players from both, and was run by an Australian money mark who may have been an absolute maniac.
Yeah, kind of sums it up.
It was genuinely one of the worst pay-per-views I've ever seen in my life, that first one. Oh, it was The Inception was the first one.
The Inception, that's what it was.
I think that was it, yeah.
I think The Awakening is the next one or something like that.
Yeah. God, yeah, so Christmas coming, the two lads know that they're going to be back on. We get our third Tori segment. She's now talking with Nash, exactly where, like, literally Hogan stood up, Nash sat down. Is basically, like, it's the same couches, same angle, everything. She asked him, so this is, she is clearly trying to sow discord between Nash and Hogan, because she's asking if the finger poke was real, and Nash at first is like, you're just trying to stir shit, basically. But then he also immediately bites on it. He's like, what do you mean? You think he can, like, finger poke that was real? And then Sarcastic is like, yeah, it was real, all right? I'll show you. And he's clearly upset and he storms off. Terrible.
Awful. Just awful.
No one wants to see that feud. No one wants to see it. Absolutely no one wants to see it. Mean Gene in the ring with Flair. Huge boos for Flair.
Mm-hmm. Well, he does the whole local sports team bit.
Yeah. I would like to say that a lot of the booing, apart from the sports reference, all caps, is the fact that there was an app. This man was wearing a hideous tie tonight.
Yeah, listen, suits. I mean, everyone loves a good suit. There was no good suits in the 90s.
No, and definitely no good ties. He says he doesn't like Canada, and in maybe the most of the era specific jibe you could throw at Canada, he slags off the exchange rate with the dollar, which is great, where he's like, I can go out on the town. Was it a $50 bill? Yeah. I can go out on the town with Mean Gene. And I can't remember what the basically, like, he could get several nights out with Mean Gene on a $50 note.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just really funny. Like, that whole, you know, the Canadian dollar isn't worth shit thing is just a real throwback reference to me. He says he has a big surprise. One of the biggest stars in the industry has been after him all day, so he's giving him a chance to make a presentation. As he's trying to say this, though, the crowd is thundering asshole chants at him. And I love that where Gene goes, we might have to edit that. And Tony, without missing a beat, just goes, it's live. But
Tony's dismay at everything in this company is going to get us through so many bad shows.
Yeah, he is our spirit animal here. But I will say, he said it was a big surprise, and I was surprised in as much as DDP had just teased that he was going to reveal his big plan, like you said, 4 minutes ago, and here he was. So I was surprised because I wasn't expecting him already.
Well, he said he was going to do it his way.
Yeah, which was, I guess, his way is, you know,
I've been pestering Ric Flair all day.
It's the right way, the wrong way, and the Homer Simpson way. Isn't the Homer Simpson way just the wrong way? Yes, but faster.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Yeah, so he's out now. Flair says, hey, I have the book now, so I can do what I want with you. Always love a reference to the book. That's definitely something I'm not fucking sick of in wrestling. He can do what he wants with him. Flair knows that he wants a match with Scott Steiner. They kind of boo lightly, and DDP responds by burying the entire nation of Canada. Flair says he has a solution to two problems at once. Tonight, Paige will wrestle Hogan to get his match with Scott.
Hogan stormed out at one point.
Yeah.
And then Flair was like, haha, you want to wrestle me. You want to wrestle Steiner, so you're going to wrestle each other. Okay.
DDP asks if Flair is scared that he's doing that because he isn't going to wrestle him. He said, no, I'm not scared. It's because I'm the boss. Like you said, Hogan came out, the crowd went crazy. Paige says he doesn't care what it takes to get to Steiner. Hogan says he doesn't care what it takes to get to the belt. So the match is on. But Flair, inexplicably, absolutely no need to add it as a stipulation. He says, okay, I'm going to be your manager tonight, Paige. And then we see, speaking of people who were only teased several minutes ago, Sting is in the rafters.
Yep.
Yeah, crowd does lose it for Sting, but I did laugh at how preposterously long it takes Flair and Hogan to see what side of the arena they need to be looking up at towards Sting. They just couldn't fucking figure it out.
I mean, we know from history that Hogan sees stuff better when he's up higher and he's looking down on something.
This is true, yeah, famous example.
Looking up, it's not as good. It's when he's looking down on things. We know his vision is 2020.
We then get the top of the era reset with our Nitro credits and the Nitro girls. And I love, you know, we're talking about how they don't give a fuck about the unopposed hour. They won't even put the Nitro girls in the unopposed hour.
No, but they were stars.
Yeah, the Nitro girls are too big time for the unopposed hour. Very, very funny. Then we get what I am going to controversially say to you was my match of the night.
I suppose it is a bit controversial.
It was Rick Steiner versus Scott Norton in a dad battle. Lee, I'm not going to lie. This was exactly what I wanted. I said, I hope this isn't these guys coming out and doing like a Fit Finley job. I hope these guys come out and they do like just power moves and strikes and no selling. And that is exactly what I got.
Yeah. I mean, if you were to write, like, you wrote down what you wanted, they gave this to you. I mean, I would call this the battle for Erin Quinn's heart.
Yeah. I let her know in the Discord. I was like, there is a match that is right up your street on this show. This might be my favorite no-selling stiff match I've seen since the infamous Giant versus Meng match that I lost it for on Night of Nitro 2 or 3.
Where they're both like, my gimmick is to no-sell, so let's both no-sell.
My gimmick is to take as few bumps as possible. So yeah, they just stand at each other, slug each other, no-selling. Give it to me, is what I wrote here. Rick clotheslines Scott out of the ring. He does his kind of like dogface gremlin, kind of like his pose on the mat. Randy Anderson tries to hold Rick Steiner back by holding the top of his head. Doesn't work very well. They get back in. Rick starts a 10 punch, which gets reversed into an atomic drop. And then Scott Norton hits a double cross chop, which absolutely pops Tanae huge on commentary. This starts a theme of the night where they're talking about, hey, when guys do moves you don't expect them to do, sometimes it can really disconcert their opponent because it's not coming from the playbook. So they really love that bit. Whip reverse, Rick dumps Norton arse over tea kettle and he rolls out again. Larry then gets involved in a long segue about how, because there was a couple of like, I think eye rakes or eye pokes or something, and he was talking about how it's a really good strategy because the one area you can't build muscle on is the eyeball, and this becomes something that distracts him for several minutes of talking. We come back from a break and Norton hits what I think might be one of the most impressive feats of strength I have ever seen on this show. And that is, the best way I can describe it is a deadweight dominator. Where Rick, he does a dominator. Rick is not going up for this move at all. And is like doing the, you know, something that everybody absolutely hated Ken Kennedy / Anderson for back in the day, where he'd do this thing to try and make it look more real, where he'd like flail his legs and stuff, but what that would do is make the other guy lose balance. And so as Rick is going up, he's like flailing and everything, as well as deadweighting Norton, and Norton's just like, fuck it, you're going up, mate.
Yeah.
And he got him up and he got him down and it looked rad.
I mean, listen, Rick Steiner's a tough guy that, you know, I wouldn't like to meet in a dark alley, but yeah. On the other end of the scale, you've Scott Norton. Listen, I think I'm taking Norton in that way.
Yeah. Rick hits a German suplex. I wonder how that would have rated on the Takeshita scale. Norton then lays him out with a fucking lariat. Rick reverses a powerbomb attempt, gets an eye poke. Larry triumphantly reminds us when this eye poke happened, he goes, remember what I said about the eye? Ha ha ha. Then Rick grabs Norton's head, clatters it into the post 3 times, back into the ring, Steiner Bulldog. I unashamedly loved this. It wasn't good, but I loved it.
It's a great example of how a bad match can be just what you want.
Yeah. It is what I, like, just fucking do something. I was begging for it on this show. I'm assuming you didn't share my enthusiasm for this one, pal.
No, I... Look, it was fine.
Yeah.
I can get why you were excited for it. I know you love your beefy dad battles.
I absolutely do. It's one of my favourite genres.
No, there's a match coming up later on in the show, which I do love.
We get a backstage segment where Ray and Kidman agree they're going to team tonight to take on the Horsemen. Then we get a world television title match, Booker T, and also a martial arts division title match.
It is.
Booker T versus Gentleman Chris Adams. I tweeted this out when it happened. I was like, Booker T, there is no one in this company that can touch him right now for world championship level gear all the time. Like we talked about how Randy Savage, in spite of being past it and not booked like a world champion just before his knee injury, he was still coming out like he was the world champion. And this is something that like Booker T definitely took to heart. Like even going back to his Harlem Heat days, like the gear was always immaculate.
Always top notch, yeah.
And even, did you see those photos of him like returning to the ring for the first time in a few years last week?
No.
Gear immaculate. It was, yeah, he had new gear made up that was like a throwback to one of his kind of late 90s.
G.I. Bro.
I can't remember, because he did a side-by-side on his Twitter. Have a look at it there while we're chatting, because I think he posted it himself. One, like, that man for, I think he's 54 now. Absolutely great, Nick. He's in. Fair play to
him. He's still young enough to get a AEW run.
But for a guy who was doing, like, this match that I think was at, like, one of the shows his school runs, like, unnecessarily main event level gear for the man.
Oh, yeah. Like, I can see the gear he has on already.
Yeah. And you're right, like, because there's someone posted the side-by-side with him, like, because he had very similar gear at some stage during his WCW run.
Yeah, it was 98, TV title run.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, still looking great. What a king. Anyway, Booker feeling it early on, but the story of the match is that Adams is looking to capitalize on Booker's recently gained confidence from the winning streak he's on. So Adams gets the heat because of Booker's like slight bit of hubris. He hits a powerbomb on Booker T that looked very sore.
Mm-hmm.
Then some really good looking clubbing blows to the back of the head. And this is the kind of stuff that, like, when we started watching Thunder and we saw, you know, Chris Adams was knocking about, this kind of stuff was more what I was hoping for from him, where it's like some good looking strikes, some razzling, some... A guy who's actually, you know, clearly in the story of the match has a game plan and things like that. That's the kind of route I'd go down with a Chris Adams. And I was happy to see it here.
Yeah, no. Listen, we said it, like you said. This is a guy that I wish kind of had more TV time. But obviously, the man had issues beyond the ring.
100%.
Yeah. One thing I will say is I couldn't take him seriously in this match for... The main reason being that, I don't know if you noticed this, but anytime he was like running at ropes or sent into a book or anything, all I could hear was these little...
no, I missed that.
He'd be making all these little sounds. He'd be like...
now I have to watch this match
again. It was like, you know when a young child is like running down a very slightly elevated hill?
Yeah,
it's like
running down like just like the slow curve at the end of a driveway.
Yeah. That's all I could think, and then after that, I just couldn't take him seriously.
Oh man, I need to watch this again. But yeah, I like that. So they did that powerbomb spot, and obviously Booker took it a little rough on his head, and I think, like maybe that was factored into the match, or maybe it was just Adams noticing that people noticed that and calling it in the ring. That then, like, a lot of his spots, like the clubbing blows to the back of the head, were focused on attacking Booker's head. And I was like, this makes so much sense. It's so simple. Because then he does, what does he do as well? He does a back suplex, a high angle back suplex, so that Booker looks like he's dumped on the top of his head again. So absolutely, like, just such simple stuff done very well. That's all we ask for. Booker then, like a kind of desperation, hits a sidekick, which gives him an opening. He hits his 110th Street Slam, Flapjack, does the Spin-a-Rooney, which is now getting pops. Harlem Sidekick again, Missile Dropkick for the win. Good little match. I always get disappointed when he does this sequence of moves, and this was another match as well where at one point the Axe Kick is used as a transition move. It's just like... He's so close to being there. The one thing Booker doesn't have right now that he's missing from being a world title level guy is that he has loads of good looking finishes, but none of them are his finish.
Loads of good offense. He just hasn't settled on that key, you know, killer blow.
Look, I'm glad he's not doing the Harlem Hangover all the time as a finish now, because like your hips can only take so much of that shit.
And he's a big
guy. And he was also fucking killing people with that thing. So I'm glad he's not doing that, but like the Missile Dropkick is not it, man. It's not it. Mm-hmm. Good little match, nothing spectacular. We get a clip then of Ray from last week at Spring Breakout saying that he's going to give Kidman a rematch for the Cruiserweight belt. Tony absolutely fucks up the transition to the next match where he introduces the video after it happens, and they're like, Tony, we just saw that.
Yeah, so he says, we're going to go to the Rey Mysterio video. They go to the video. They come back and it's like, Tony's like, yeah, we're going to go to an explanation from Rey Mysterio about whatever. And Tanae's just like, Tony, they just showed it.
He's like, no one told me. And the two lads absolutely mercilessly bury him for that, which I gotta say, deserved in this case. Singles match up next, Jericho versus Jerry Flynn. Huge reaction for Jericho.
Now, this is one instance where I am really annoyed that they play the Jericho music over, because you can't really get an appreciation for just how over this man was.
Yeah, I'd say, like, because obviously by the time he's talking, the reaction isn't as big. Mm-hmm. I'd say, like, his initial pop was probably massive based on the reaction once the music dies down. They give him a moment where he's allowed to indulge it. He's babyface entrance, and he says Chris Jericho is 100% Canadian, and then proceeds to turn heel on Canada. But, you know, these Canadian crowds are smart enough that, like, they boo him because they know they're supposed to, but they still, it's not exactly like they're going to be, hey, Jerry Flynn, we want you to win now. Mm-hmm. Flynn wailing on him early, but pretty much as soon as he gets the heat, like, they're not interested in Jerry Flynn. They're just chanting for Brett.
Did Jerry Flynn botch a catapult into the corner?
Yeah, I think he did.
Because now he transitions sloppily to a single leg crab, but he absolutely tried to catapult Jericho, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah, I'm pretty sure he did, yeah. I just did not go great for him. I don't know, that seems like one of those foolproof moves. But here we are. They also... So yeah, the match is kind of nothing. They also completely fuck up a roll-up.
Yep.
So Flynn has completely lost track of where he is in the ring. There's a roll-up and Flynn is way too close to the ropes. And this felt like, you know, it would play into a story for WrestleMania 19, the idea that, you know, Jericho idolized Shawn. This was a very petulant Shawn Michaels-esque moment where the roll-up gets fucked up and Jericho at least appears to stand up and kick him in the face. Like Vader style.
Wasn't it
Vader that was like, fucking move! And he kicked him in the face? Yeah.
It absolutely to me looked like a shoe kick in the face. And Chris Jericho, Chris Irvine, is very fucking lucky that Jerry Lynn didn't fuck his shit up backstage.
Jerry Flynn would have eaten him for fucking breakfast. And he does the kind of like, because obviously the roll up was supposed to be the finish, so he does the rope assisted pin for the win, and he's clearly annoyed, gets out of the ring, and he's just fucking muttered under his breath. Our next segment sees Gene Okerlund, Spice the Nitro Girl, and porn music with the Beatle. Gene keeps implying he wants to get in the car with Spice. It's them talking about the sweepstake and about how great this Beatle Adventure Racing game is. My one takeaway from this is it just me, or does Spice have more charisma than half this roster currently?
Yeah, well, we are now approaching the era where the Nitro Girls are going to start becoming characters on the show.
Yeah. To me, I was looking at this going, to this point, Spice has been wasted on Nitro Girl segments, because you could have had her doing something more, like talking for somebody like a, you know,
Prince Ikea.
Just anybody. Like so many people in this company are clearly not comfortable with a microphone in front of them, and she was just like fairly effortless and casual here. So fair play. The Hitman is here, and this, you want to talk about a fucking hero's welcome.
Hang on. Before we get into the hero's welcome, Brett's music plays, and nobody reacts because nobody knows it's Brett's music.
Yeah. I wasn't sure. Absolutely beloved. Leans so hard into it. He is Canada's hero, and he loves being Canada's hero, as has been noted everywhere. And he recites "O Canada" for everyone. And then, as if he wasn't already babyface enough, he proceeds to run down Bischoff, Flair, and Hogan in short order.
Mm-hmm. He also calls Goldberg William Goldberg.
Yes, I loved that. So he said he's here to make a reputation, not lose it. He can excellently execute anyone at any time. Big, big cheer for that. And like you said, Lee, let's cut to the chase. The franchise player, William Goldberg, which got a huge reaction from me, calls him a big chicken and that he's going to wait here till he faces him. References the real life, you know, WCW baiting people again, that, you know, they were putting a bounty for Steve Austin to fight Goldberg.
Yeah, it wasn't a challenge he made on Leno, I think.
Yeah. And Brett says, you know, you're wasting all this money trying to fight Steve Austin. I beat Steve Austin every time I wrestled him. And I'm just like, fucking, oh, that's a great line. Great line. This is like...
Before you even go any further, you have to mention, Brett walked out in a black Calgary Hitman.
Yeah.
Calgary Hitmen hockey jersey.
And so he's wearing the Hitman jersey. And then this line comes in next where he says... Goldberg, you fancy yourself a tough football player. This is hockey country. Come out and fight me. And then what did he do, Lee?
He whips off the Hitman jersey and reveals a Toronto Maple Leafs jersey.
And this building nearly just crumbled.
Yeah.
The reaction was so loud.
I mean, listen, there had to be copious amounts of children created on this night, all named Brett, because...
Yeah.
The men and women in this arena lost for him revealing the Maple Leafs jersey. Now, my takeaway is Bret Hart walked out wearing two hockey jerseys under them ring lights.
What a man. Like, I couldn't imagine not getting heat stroke within seconds.
I mean, people asked why his hair was always so wet. The man was sweating.
This is how, that's how he got a nice steam on. He just wore hockey jerseys and sweated off the carbs. So Goldberg comes out, circles Brett for a couple of seconds.
Hang on. Goldberg comes out.
Do you want to, look, set the scene for us, Lee. You take the ship here.
Goldberg comes out, the music hits, and we get the piped in. Now, we get the instant boos, loud boos.
Yeah.
And of course, being WCW, they played the Goldberg track with the piped in. Goldberg. Yeah. Goldberg.
Never has it been more obvious that it's piped in than that moment.
Morons. Absolutely, just go with the booze.
Yeah,
I mean, just absolute idiots.
That's one thing I will say. You won't often hear me say the phrase to WWE's credit, but eventually they did lean into the Bizarro Land stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? They didn't like it, but
yes,
they
hence
why they
called it Bizarro Land.
Yes, they did acknowledge that it was a thing they couldn't really avoid.
They couldn't control. Yeah.
So you know, I often think of the ultimate one. Is the Sean one.
Yeah.
Where they played Brett's music.
Oh, I love that.
Fucking hell.
I love that video.
How he made it out of that building alive that night, I have no idea. But anyway.
Anyway, Goldberg comes steaming out. No pyro, no nothing. He's just in his street clothes. And he proceeds to circle Brett. And Brett is continually talking shit. As they're kind of circling and kind of going back and forth. And then Goldberg just a two-step fucking, you want to talk about football player, he takes them two steps and the momentum he builds up.
Yeah, if you're not somebody who's like into sports and you hear somebody who is talking about sports talk about somebody with like explosivity over a short distance, this is that.
Yeah, I mean, just they can't have been more than 10 feet away from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the velocity Goldberg hits Bret Hart with the spear.
he fucking hoofs the cunt now, into the air.
Honestly, for this angle, it couldn't have looked any better.
Yeah.
He hits the spear and neither of them move. Like, they literally both just go flat out, pancaked. Goldberg lying on top of Bret. And the commentary team are like, oh, you know, he hit the spear. And then they're like, wait, neither of them are moving. What's going on? And they're kind of speculating. They haven't seen a replay yet. They're like, did Goldberg spike his head? Did he knock himself out on Brett's ribs? What's happened?
Yeah.
And then Brett starts to stir. He's the first one. And the crowd are like, alive.
As soon as he like moves an arm, they lose it.
They lose it. They're like, hang on, what? Brett's moving.
Yeah.
And... So Brett, like, slowly, and this takes a good, a minute doesn't sound like a lot of time, but when neither man is moving, it's a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
And over this, I'd say it's about a minute long, and Brett kind of stirs, and he kind of half sits up, and begins kind of shaking himself awake, and he proceeds to roll Goldberg off him. He pins him, counts to 1, 2, 3, and as he's standing up, he... takes off the Maple Leafs jersey to reveal the steel plate. And let me tell you, the crowd go fucking apeshit once again. It wasn't the tree count that set them off. It was the reveal of Bret Hart being the fucking smartest man in the world.
Now, they loved the three count, don't get me wrong. But yeah, it just goes to another level when the plate is revealed. And he says, what is it? He says, respect that.
Yeah.
To Goldberg. And he says, hey, Bischoff, hey, WCW, I quit. And as they go to break, JJ is out and he's getting in JJ's face.
Okay. Now, this is where I got really annoyed.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bret's promo, he addresses Bischoff, he addresses Hogan, whatever. That's grand. That's all storyline stuff. He was in that loop with Bischoff and Hogan. He was NWO associated, blah, 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 blah. That's cool. So, Ric Flair is the on-screen president for life.
Yeah.
J.J. Dillon is the commissioner still, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
We've established that Eric Bischoff no longer has any power.
Yeah.
So, as Bret quits, that's fine. JJ is coming out going, what you doing? And he basically tells JJ to go fuck himself. That's fine. But then we come back from break where they recap what just happened. And Eric Bischoff, the real Eric Bischoff, without the hair dyed and all this, is now kind of out pleading with Bret.
Yeah.
So what they are basically telling you is, oh yeah, that whole Ric Flair thing, that's not real. The real man in charge is Eric Bischoff.
Hmm. It's
they can't get out their own way.
It's too, like, they had like bowled a strike, mm-hmm. and they still somehow fucked it.
They fucked it right at the end. Instead of just having Bret walk out, they had to do the whole, oh, during the commercial, we saw Eric Bischoff. We haven't seen him in months.
Mm-hmm.
Why is he there? He's not an on-screen guy. Like, it's...
Yeah.
They instead of going, yeah, we're doing this thing with Flair where he has all the power, they've now just totally undermined it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really, really disappointing because, like you so eloquently described there, it was just a crackerjack segment for the most part. Again, we'd probably have done it, you know, I'd probably have put the belt on them just for the fuck of it. Like, they hotshot shit all the time. Why not? But still, for what they wanted to do, this was nearly perfect.
Listen, if they did this segment here where he quits and all that,
mm-hmm.
if they know, right, we're coming back to Toronto in 4 months' time, we're going to have Bret win the title in Toronto. Mm-hmm. Absolutely fine. Build that shit up. But they don't. They just... It's infuriating because, yeah, they did this great angle with Bret and Goldberg. We've never seen Bret versus Goldberg. Grant, it's a fresh main event level match. No problem. Build to it. Mm-hmm. Grant, awesome segment. And then they fucking ruin it by just getting in their own way and doing, oh, well, here's the guy with the real power.
Yeah, they just can't fucking help
them. Instead of them just going, WCW, I quit. It has to be Bischoff. It has.
Yeah.
It's so annoying.
Yeah. Oh, well. Still a great segment for the most part and worth looking back on if you've never seen the whole thing. We then get, so when we came back from the break, they showed the Bischoff bit, they showed a replay of the spear. We then get a Buff and Scott video package leading into a singles match, which was Buff versus Norman Smiley. The legit tweeting man looks absolutely enormous at the moment.
This is the debut of Buff Daddy's music.
Yeah, yeah. The very recognizable Buff Daddy theme, which was good because it was like, you never know when these new WCW themes come in, are they going to be randomly dubbed out?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very happy to hear this one intact. Buff reminds everybody that him and Scott are no more, and that also he is the stuff. There's a great moment. So Bobby, we should have mentioned, Bobby's on commentary now, and there's a great moment here early in the match where he talks like for about 10 or 15 seconds. Sounds like he's really gassing off Bagwell. Like, you know, you think about the injury this guy had, the rehab he went through. As like, you know, the idea that he came back into the ring and he's wrestling after that neck injury is incredible. I know none of us here would ever do that. And then he pauses and goes, How dumb is he? Which is great. Just spent ages gassing up, and they're like, what a fucking idiot. Which I really liked.
Yep. If there's one thing that is consistent on WCW television, it is that, in fact, Buff Bagwell is a moron.
Yeah. Buff showboating big time early on, and that...
Hey, what a face.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's like, the crowd were loving it, and I was just like, the difference between his face and heel personas are non-existent. Mm-hmm. It's literally the same, except at some point someone was like, no, we're not booing him now.
But,
okay.
But Buff, the baby face, has his own face inside a love heart on his new trunks.
Yeah, incredible. I wonder if this matchup of, like, because Norman Smiley, obviously a very good technician, we've talked about him before plenty on the show. Like, this seems like a matchup that before the neck injury, when Buff still had athleticism and had potential, that this could have been a decent matchup. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Buff is already at this stage much more limited.
Yeah, he's very immobile at this point. I can see what you're saying. Like, it was a match that you could have put on TV for 10 minutes and it would have been pretty good, I think.
Yeah.
Whereas I thought this was pretty damn disappointing for all that was in it.
Yeah. Two really good spots in here from Smiley. He hits a really good-looking vertical suplex, but the move of Norman Smiley is that I could just watch all day long is that wind-up scoop slam. Yeah. That is just incredible. And with a guy like the heft of Buff, it's very impressive.
I really wish somebody would start doing that.
Yeah. It's really just... It's just like... It looks like the physics of it shouldn't work. That he should tip over, and he just doesn't. It's great.
Did you watch that FCW documentary on the network?
Yeah.
So Zach... Is that not Zach? The other one. Fucking Hawkins. Said he...
Prince of Queens.
Whatever his name. What's his name? Brian Myers?
Kurt Hawkins. Brian Myers.
Yeah. He was saying he when he was in FCW, he asked Smiley to show him how to do it, and he said he showed him how to do it, and Smiley said he could use it. Now, obviously, nobody watches Brian Myers matches, so maybe he does use it.
Not after that AJ Styles match, anyway.
Now, listen, for all
that guy gets such pelters for one very, very highly visible botch he did.
He made a rod for his own back. That's all I'll say. Look, he could use it in every match. Nobody will ever know. Listen, when
I just didn't expect when I sat down tonight. It's like, I can usually tell, it's like, these are the people Lee is probably going to put it into. I didn't expect you to put both feet in on Brian Myers tonight.
Listen, when you're in a tag team with Zack Ryder and you're the Jannetty of the two. I mean, even Mojo Rawley wasn't a Jannetty.
He is the Jannetty of Ryder's two Jannettys.
Yeah. He's like the Al Snow of the Rockers.
Oh, fucking hell. Fucking hell. Oh.
But right, my point being, somebody really should take that scoop slam and start doing it.
Yeah, oh, we're absolutely, if somebody signs up next month on the TRL tier, they're definitely sending us a Brian Myers comp.
No, nobody has a Brian Myers comp. Even Brian Myers doesn't have a Brian Myers comp.
Okay, I need to move on.
Like, what would be in a Brian Myers comp?
I'm twirling that fucking baton around.
The fucking fucking baton.
Right, okay. So, Buff wins with a blockbuster. The commentary now gets around to the fact, even though we had seen a segment earlier that set up the match, they only now get around to explaining that the Horseman basically went to the locker room earlier and laid out a challenge to anybody. and it was the two cruiserweights that took them up on it. So this leads us to a tag team title match that was Benoit and Malenko versus Kidman and Rey Mysterio. And this starts off with Benoit beating Kidman like he owed him fucking money.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Benoit early in this match is just chopping the absolute shit out of Kidman.
It's the closest to a shoot back body drop I've ever seen as well.
Before the match began, we had like the real highlight of the show, where they do an on-camera spot with the commentators,
mm-hmm.
and Tony is, you know, throwing it to Tanae to talk about something. Then he's like, Heenan's trying to say something, and Tony's like, right, come on, what have you got to say? And Heenan comes back with, oh, you really want to know what I think? And Tony just goes, no, I don't. And it kind of
you're going to tell us anyway.
And it throws Brain off. And he's like, well, you really want to know what I think? And Tony just goes, right, we're going to the match.
we're going to the match. He's going to tell us anyway. And then they cut to the entrances. And he's like, well, Brain, what was your big idea? Basically.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Great grappling exchanges leading to a really pissed off Benoit just clubbing Kidman in the head. Mm-hmm. Good wrestling things happening through a break. I love the story of this match was the capital W wrestlers making the Flippy Boys suffer,
yeah.
Particularly Kidman.
I mean, you want to talk about a simple story of the wrestlers grounding the high flyers. That was this match.
Hmm. There was a really cool counter in here where the Horsemen are double teaming Kidman and they go to give him like a pop-up spine buster and he pushes off and drop kicks both of them.
Well,
loved that.
What they had done is they'd done the double flapjack like less than 2 minutes before that.
Yes.
And they went to do it again and then he countered it into the dropkick.
Yeah, really, really good. Then he tags Ray in straight away. Big pop for Ray. Great little comeback. He launches Kidman outside.
Some really good double teams. Like for a team guys that never team together.
Yeah. Which was emphasized on commentary. Ray turns around into Malenko, eats a backbreaker, but he fires up. Malenko catches him, goes to put him in the cloverleaf, but Saturn and Raven are out. Even flow on Malenko. Ray covers, and we have new tag team champions, Kidman and Rey Mysterio.
Are you surprised by this?
I knew they have the reign, but I forgot it. Like, I didn't think it was this soon.
Okay, no, you know? they do have a reign during the Filthy Animals era.
Yeah.
So you obviously didn't know that this reign took
place. Yeah, so I must be confusing it with the other one. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, no, again, Spring Stampede coming up is one of my favorite pay-per-views of all time. So this, I was very much aware that this was the match where they win the titles.
Mm-hmm.
So the commentators, when Saturn and Raven walk out, do go, oh, we saw this on Thunder, where Saturn is aligned with Raven again.
Yeah.
And
nice of them to do a small bit of Thunder continuity for us.
And I mean, yeah, they do the whole distraction finish and Raven hitting Malenko with the DDT. A great DDT, first of all.
Yes.
But yeah, just the tag team titles for the first time in our entire run on this show actually feel important.
Yeah, it might be the first tag title change we've seen that got a deserved big pop.
Mm-hmm.
A really, really nice little match. Obviously, you'd always prefer if the plucky babyfaces win it clean, but I think, you know, obviously, given what they're doing in the company now, they're not going to have the Horsemen.
Well, I was just going to say, I think you can justify it with the way the Horsemen have been going on the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
That this is very much a case of your own medicine.
Yeah. I think if it wasn't for the fact that it's in a company where this shit happens all the fucking time, I wouldn't have a bad thing to say about it, you know? But a really good little match to that point. And, I mean, these are definitely three teams I like to see mixing it up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'd watch any combination of these two teams any day. Sorry, I'm watching something on the TV as we're talking here.
Yeah, professional.
Oh yeah, absolutely. it's a match from 2006. It's Arsenal, the last game ever at Highbury.
Yes.
And they're playing Wigan.
Okay.
And I just saw somebody there. Do you remember Graham Kavanagh?
Yes.
Irish international and Premier League footballer, apparently.
Yes, the youngest man to have a full head of grey hair I'd ever seen in my life.
Yeah, I have no recollection of him actually being a Premier League footballer.
Yeah, yeah. Was it with Cardiff?
Wigan, apparently.
As, no, he was at Wigan as well, but did he play with Cardiff as well at some stage?
Possibly. I just remember having the silver hair for like his whole career.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that. Silver Fox.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah. We then get a replay of the Cineburst Spring Breakout segment from last week. Then we get more Nitro Girls before the main event, which is DDP with Ric Flair versus Hollywood Hogan. Your best mate, Buff Dog, is in the house.
I can't believe they flew Michael Buffer to fucking Toronto.
It cracks me up to no end, Lee, that this is the one person the commentary will not talk over because they're paying him so goddamn much.
Mm-hmm.
I keep trying to, because I know you'd looked up before, trying to get the exact fee that he was getting paid per appearance. And like people argue, depending on where you're looking, somewhere between 50 and 150 grand per appearance. You know, some people say 250 is like, to me,
no way.
That's definitely not a chance.
Now, listen, do I think WCW got a special rate because he was on so often? Probably.
Yeah. But one thing I saw that was confirmed by somebody is that whatever his booking fee was, that he would charge an additional, I believe it was $5,000 if he was going to say, let's get ready to rumble as part of his appearance, which is incredible. It's like, you can get me, but you have to pay extra to say the thing that's the only reason you're getting me here in the first place. Absolute grifter of the highest order.
And I still think Bruce is better than him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%. Huge Hogan chance. You want a fact. This is the Dave fact of the week for you, buddy. You ready for this?
Are we going to get a sting for this now?
You're seated comfortably. Oh, no, I'm not that. Okay, I don't care that much. I'm not editing in a fucking sting for this. Are you kidding me? So, according to Cage Match, this is the first time Hogan has wrestled in Canada since a WCW house show match with Jacques Rougeau.
I was going to say Ray, it was Jacques. Yeah.
In 1997. And this is his last match in Canada until he wrestles The Rock at WrestleMania 18.
Okay, so you know that Jacques Rougeau match sold out a big fucking arena?
Incredible. Well, I'd believe it. Because again, like you said, Hogan is over like Rover in Canada.
But it wasn't the fact that it's the Rougeaus. It was in... Oh, fucking, what's their territory? I can't remember which territory it is, but yeah, the Rougeaus were fucking huge and a part of Canada. Yeah. And basically, Jock wanted to be Hogan. And I don't know if he did, I doubt he did.
Yeah.
But basically, they never ran it back, even though there was like money on the table, because egos got in the way.
Shocking. But yeah, it's kind of mad that like he hasn't. Like, it just goes to show how infrequently WCW were there, that he hasn't wrestled there in nearly 2 years, and that he won't ever wrestle there again for this company. The next time he wrestles in Canada is that famous match with The Rock at WrestleMania.
Never heard of it.
And, oh, wait till I tell you, mate. Wait till I tell you. The crowd was the real star. Don't want to spoil it too much. Over. Yeah. So we get a stare down and then a slugfest. The typical Hogan thing of him overpowering DDP. Shite clothesline off the ropes. DDP backs Hogan into a corner for a minute. There gets Hogan chant. There's like an awkward moment here, Lee, where the two of them clearly lose their where they are in the match, because they're obviously like the two of these guys. This match is rehearsed to fuck.
Mm-hmm.
So they clearly lose their place. The break is coming up quicker than they were expecting. So they're like panicked for a second as to how to get to the spot where they go to the break. They eventually find it. Page clotheslines Hogan over the top as we go to the break. Brawling at the announce table on the stage. Tony is disgusted by how they destroyed their announce table. I enjoyed the prolonged spot where they tried to knock over the WCW sign.
They destroyed the announce table by brawling around it and into the little girder thing. So obviously they are setting up for having the new Nitro stage next week.
Yes.
Yes, because they just didn't want to ship this one back from Canada, is my guess.
Yeah. They tried so hard to knock this thing over, Lee.
So they try on one side. So obviously the famous Nitro stage has the two massive WCW is either side of the ramp.
Yeah.
So they're on one side of the ramp and they try twice to knock it over. Mm-hmm. Unsuccessfully. Yes. They then go to the WCW on the other side, which it takes two attempts to knock over.
Yes.
they then go back to the original side they were on and try again to knock it over to no avail. But they destroyed the stage.
Yeah. You should see, when they go over, they knocked one over, and then they were clearly feeling their oats a bit. And they, when they go back to the other one that they couldn't knock over before, you've never seen a more two men cooperating to try and, like, both of them essentially push. they abandoned the move they were trying to make it look like they were doing, and both of them just basically pushed it, and they still couldn't do it.
Which, I mean, listen, I'm no engineering genius here, Dave.
Yeah.
But if I know a spot is we're going to destroy the stage, I might just say, well, if we just, you know, unscrew or loosen or before the main event.
Or one of you leave your feet and hurtle your whole body into it would have done the job.
If you've ever seen a Hulk Hogan WCW match, you know he doesn't leave his feet that often.
That's not happening. Not on TV, brother. That's not going to work for me. So lots of walk and brawl. Heel Page is so flat in this building, in this match. They just don't care.
Yep.
But they are chanting bid time for Hogan, so I good, I guess. Hogan, who is the babyface, starts his comeback with an eye rake.
Classic babyface Hogan.
He does a suplex, he does repeated elbows. Hogan absolutely gassed. And then Lee, the finishing sequence comes. And do you want to explain this? This is like a schmoz upon schmozes, this finish.
Okay, so we get Hogan whips DDP into the corner, who squashes Mickey J. Hogan then runs in with a clothesline, double squashes Mickey J. We get a Hogan big boo as he's teasing, setting up for the leg drop. Lil H, Charles Robinson, runs in. The announcers then go, oh, Robinson has a history of not counting for Hogan. Hogan misses the leg drop. We then get Ric Flair running in with a chair, I believe, which Charles Robinson, to his credit, pretends to turn away and not look at, because that's the storyline.
Yeah.
Flair then proceeds to, ever so gently,
oh my god, this chair shot.
He places the chair against the back of DDP's head, which,
as it gently rubbed him with the chair,
which then knocks out DDP, because obviously DDP had been holding Hogan and reversed or whatever. Hogan then decks Flair. Hogan hits the leg drop on DDP. Robinson refuses to count. Hogan then decks Robinson, which gets a massive pop. Hogan then recovers DDP, who's been down for about 15 months at this stage. And Mickey J recovers in time to make the three count. So your fresh new heel DDP just got absolutely killed.
Yeah.
In his first main event.
And then we gotta go. We're out of time. Yeah. You know, you kind of teased early what we thought of the overall show, but first, what do you think of this main event? Because I guess it's one of those things where, in spite of whatever quality we thought it was, the crowd seemed fairly happy.
I think the crowd were happy to get their Hogan shtick and all that. And that's fine. But I wish he had been facing an established heel.
Yeah.
I don't agree with doing the DDP turn. It didn't need to be done. Yeah. It very much screams of, well, Hogan's a face now and he doesn't want any other faces overshadowing.
The one thing I will say I loved about this main event is Bobby Heenan. Bobby Heenan did a tremendous job of basically saying, look, I fucking hate this guy, but Hogan is, you know, the biggest star in this industry. I've seen him fight back against insurmountable odds I don't know how many times. So, like, as far as Heenan staying in character of, like, this man will always hate Hogan, but also putting the guy over huge, I think this was a phenomenal performance from him. And it's the best overall Bobby Heenan we've seen in weeks.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
But yeah, otherwise, as a match, apart from the absolute hilarity of them trying to knock over the sign, there's very little I will ever remember about this.
Yeah, and I mean, look, the chair shot just absolutely killed anything about this match. If you're going to do the chair shot finish, you have to fucking hit him.
Yeah. It was the combined, the chair shot, and then the delayed, like, you can see the cogs turning in Paige's head. It's like, should I even bother selling this?
And then he had to sell the leg drop for fucking at least 3 minutes. Like, it's just awful. Awful stuff. Like I said, I don't agree with the Paige heel turn, but Jesus, if you're going to turn him heel, give him a fucking hot angle.
Commit to it, yeah.
And don't just bury him in his first main event.
Yeah. Right, pal. Overall thoughts on the show, winners and losers, and let's get out of here.
Disappointing show. The tag team title match was, in my opinion, the best match on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Huge pop for Hogan, obviously notwithstanding. It was all about Brett Goldberg.
Yeah. Look, we picked this Nitro for a reason. That is the reason. We're not coming back to Nitro. There's one Ever. Next month. There's one next month that has a couple of pretty big matches that we're kind of tempted by, but we'll have to see, because we've done a lot of these Nights of Nitros now. Like, we've done three in the last couple of months, so, you know, we'll wait and see on that one. But yeah, it wasn't, I tell you, if this was your first Nitro, with the exception of that one segment, probably didn't leave a great taste in your mouth. Yeah, we kind of alluded to it at the start of the show, so we've got two Thunders left before Spring Stampede, so that is on the public feed. That is where we're going next, is to Thunder 57, I believe. It's the first half of a double set from Richmond, Virginia, so that's what we'll be doing in 2 weeks' time. If you want more of our hijinks, patreon.com/WCW Thunder Pod. Thanks, everybody, for listening to another episode of Knights of Nitro. We'll see you again in a couple of weeks. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Thanks, everyone, for listening to another episode of Days of Thunder. Days of Thunder was produced by Lee Malone and edited by me, Dave Ryan. Keep up to date with the show and find all the ways to listen to us. You can follow us on Twitter at WCWThunderPod or click the Linktree link in our Twitter bio or in the show notes. I am at The Day to Dave on Twitter, and Lee is at Malone_713. Days of Thunder is a part of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. Follow the VOW network anywhere good podcasts are sold for more fine podcasts than you can shake a stick at. Thanks.